Welcome to this episode of Priestly Passion, where I interview priests in the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. Today I'm speaking with Reverend Tom Hawkshurst, who serves at St. Patrick Catholic Church, here located down close by historic Fifth Ward, Houston neighborhood. Thank you for agreeing to meet with us today, even though I know we had Tropical Storm Imelda, which kind of shook Houston up a little bit. So let's just get started. So one thing I want to know is, how long have you been a priest?
I've been ordained now for 7 years.
Okay. So give us a little bit of information about your upbringing. Like, did anybody notice in your family something that, a character trait that said, hey, you'll be a good candidate for the priesthood? Did you grow up in, like, a real devout Catholic family? Or tell us a little bit about, like, that life.
Okay. My dad is a very strong Catholic. His family are. My mom actually wasn't Catholic. She was Episcopal. But they're, you know, they were both. She was also a person of faith. And so I have a brother and a sister. And, you know, both our parents made sure that faith was part of our lives from our beginning. Mom was kind of funny about it because she and Dad got married just before Vatican II. They got married in 1965, just as the reforms for Vatican II were coming into effect. And so they actually got married in the rectory at the parish church, because it was one of those things they did back then for marriages between a Catholic and a non-Catholic. She never quite let go of that one. Growing up, two of my dad's sisters are aunt, or my two of my aunts are nuns, and we lived two blocks from our parish church. My brother and I were altar servers. So faith was just always part of our lives. I don't recall anybody, suggesting me the priesthood or anything like that when I was a kid. People were supportive of a lot of people worked to make sure that we had relationships with God. And I grew up in New Orleans, and I came over here to Houston when I finished high school to go to college at the University of St. Thomas. And all through my life, I've known a lot of very, very good priests. There were the guys in our parish when we were kids, who were just always around. There was one old priest, Father Weber. Father Weber was maybe 80 when he got to my parish. He was past retirement now. And there was another priest who would drive him around, Father Paul, who was Indian. And the joke was that Father Paul couldn't tell you where they'd been, and Father Clarence couldn't remember. Father Paul's English wasn't very good, and Father Weber's memory at his age. But when my sister and I got sick with chickenpox, and we had to stay home from school for a while, it was Father Weber who came over, and visited us and prayed with us. And so all growing up, there were priests present in our lives. Same when I was in high school, and then when I got here to Houston to go to St. Thomas, it was run by the Brazilian Fathers. And they were very present on campus. They were just always around. Get to know them, talk to them. There were a lot of men who impressed me, who I really valued knowing them. Like with Father Leon, I heard a little bit of your interview with him. I'm a delayed vocation. I didn't enter the seminary until 2006. After I'd been working for, 18 years in total by that point, I guess. And I was about 40 when I entered. And
what did you do prior?
I was a high school teacher.
Oh, what subject did you teach?
I taught social studies down in Carnot Wood Academy, down by the ballpark.
Okay.
The juice box, as they call it.
That's like the Catholic school that's like
red? Yes, Sisters in Carnot Wood, Blessed Sacrament. I got out of college, and I had a history degree, and I was thinking education was the way I wanted to go. And so I had a few different jobs, and I went to graduate school in Alabama. And a friend of mine was already teaching at the academy, and he put in a good word. The principal at the time was a sister, Bridget, a wonderful lady, very Irish. And I came in there with my resume and all my stuff ready to impress her. And she goes, "Well, Glenn here says you're a good man, so we'll take you." That was it. So I was hired. And Glenn actually left. He's now a straight Jesuit. He's been there for many years. But I stayed there for 14 more years. And it was just a great thing. And to get to your question about what made me or led me to the priesthood, really, it was gratitude. A lot of good things. People who were put into my life in strange ways. Glenn got me a job. Another buddy of mine, who was also in college, was working to become a cop, and he's now a federal agent. But he had this idea that he and his wife lived out in Alief, and they rode with the volunteer fire department out there. And so I was a single guy, I was bored, and he said, "Why don't you come play with us?" And so I did. And he left that thing because he got hired and transferred, all that kind of stuff, moved out of town. And I stayed right there with the community fire department. I knew the Mission Bend area for 10 years. And it was a lot of fun, you know. Granted, it was kind of a pain to deal with people and their misery, their suffering, but it was a real blessing to me. And so anyway, so it was all this kind of stuff. And so right around 2000, my mom died in 2003, and that, you know, was a bit of a shaker for me, just because I missed her, you know. I wasn't angry at God or any of that kind of stuff, but it was just, it caused me to kind of start thinking. And what I was struck by was the, you know, the many, many blessings that God kept putting in my path. The people. You know. So I got in touch with Father Clint Russell, who was the vocations director at that time. And just started talking, and he sent me to a life awareness retreat, which the diocese put on these days. And he led me to say, okay, I'll give it a try.
Mm-hmm. How was it like growing up with two aunts who were nuns?
Well, it was fun. My dad's family's big. He was one of six. They weren't around a whole lot because they were stationed in different parts of the country. There was a little bit of joking about it in the family. They were the first and the last of the kids. My aunt Alma, who's still alive, she's a Sister Mercy, and she lives up at their retirement home in St. Louis. And my youngest aunt, Adele, she died of cancer about 10 years ago. My grandfather, her dad, knew that she wanted to join the convent. This was in the late 50s. And the family supported it. And the youngest one, Deli, she didn't tell anybody. She was registered to start college. She was going to LSU up in Baton Rouge, where my dad had gone. And she went up to college, apparently, and just never came home. She'd been talking to the sisters, but she hadn't told her family. And she left from Baton Rouge to go up to Pennsylvania, where their mother house was. And they were stationed around the country, different parts. And so, they'd come into town every now and then. And towards the later, they'd moved in. It was normal, to get back to your question. My grandparents were very proud of their daughters who'd, had done that. Faith was very much part of our lives, and so that was, I guess, the most thing. It wasn't like, strange or anything. Just
right. Okay. So going on to the next question, in sacred scripture, Jesus Christ calls us to love God and love neighbor, and that's like repeated constantly from the Old Testament to the New Testament. Mm-hmm. How do you bring that into your vocation as a priesthood?
Well, the wonderful things about, about what the Lord asked there is that it's hard a lot of times because people are annoying. it's a necessary part of life. St. Patrick, people will tell you we're the north side. This is the Lindale area of town. And one of the things that I love about it is it's not like the neighborhood I grew up in. People walk down the street, people peer into your yard because they see what you're doing, and you visit right there over the fence, that kind of stuff. And so to love your neighbor, it's a necessary thing in terms of, you help each other out, whether it's, after the storm, there's a lot of trash around, people getting their lives back in order, fortunately, not too many people got water in their homes right here, but, in other parts of town where they did, you go help out. The thing about what Jesus is saying there is he's not just talking about, scratch your back and scratch mine. He's leading us to lay down our lives for another person. I think the Lord, I think he accepts it when we just do the I scratch your back, so you scratch mine, which is, a lot of what makes the world go round, makes our world a better place. But it wasn't that specific verse that led me to the priesthood. But it is a necessary thing in our Christian life that if we are going to awaken a real culture of vocations in our community. That when we see that love of others, and we experience it, you know, because like I said, it was gratitude. It was my recognition of the blessings that other people had done, all the good things that God had given me through other people that gave me the courage to start to investigate.
Mm-hmm. Have you always served at this parish?
No, this is my second parish as a priest. Because of being a lay vocation, have you met Father Marshall Oya?
No.
Okay. Father Marshall is the pastor at St. Matthew, the evangelist up kind of northwest of here.
Okay.
We jokingly call ourselves twins. He's from Cameroon, so you may guess we don't look a whole lot alike. But our trajectories end up. Father Marshall started studying for the priesthood over in Cameroon, and then discerned out, and he immigrated to the United States, and he worked in New York, and came down to Houston eventually. And so he might be a good candidate for your future podcast. Anyway, so he entered the seminary without needing much studies. Because of my kind of twisty path to the seminary, and because of my age, they kind of wrote off some of the studies requirements. And so when Marshall and I were ordained to the diaconate, we were sent out to the parishes. We weren't kept in the seminary. You know, these days most guys are ordained transitional deacons, and they spend one more year in studies. We have a transitional deacon with us here this year, Deacon Pedro Hernandez. He's from the Brownsville Diocese. But anyway, so Marshall was sent up to St. Ignatius of Loyola, and I was sent down to St. Luke the Evangelist down in the South Belt. And kind of the idea, I gather, was that we were supposed to, that was going to be our first parish after we were ordained priests, you know, first vicar assignment. And he got to stay at his, but because of moves and stuff like that, I got pulled out of St. Luke and sent to St. Lawrence, which was my first, right after we were both ordained priests in January. Our class was a big class. We were two of us ordained in January. Five of the guys were ordained in June at the usual time, and one more guy was ordained in December of that year. And so I went from St. Luke to St. Lawrence, and I was there in St. Lawrence for 3 years, and I've been here now for 4.
Okay. So another question that's interesting is, I know that you mentioned that the community is different from the one that you grew up in. How have you been involved in the community, like in this community? Like, what have you interacted with the parishioners and, like, assisted with, like, food drives, counseling, drug abuse sort of thing? Like, what kind of ministries are you involved in the community?
Personally, as little as possible.
Okay.
No. This place, the north side, you know, we're sort of inner city, and it was a lot rougher, years ago. We're part of the gentrification happening, you know, from the Heights.
Right.
People are coming over, buying homes, putting up big new homes, that kind of thing. But there's still, you know, a fair amount of poverty. We have some very generous people. We do have a food fair ministry. We used to have a food pantry back in the 80s. The building fell into disrepair. And the city, rightly so, regulates very carefully, you know, food storage, because you want to make sure it's clean and healthy.
Right.
So what we do is twice is we collect canned goods and dry foods and that kind of stuff. And the last Sunday of the month, we have a fair. People who are in need, that we've been posting it, they come, and they can pick up a box of stuff to help them. It's coming up, not this Sunday, but last Sunday of the month. And another one of our neighbor parishes, Trinity Grace Baptist, they're over here on Terry Street. The second Wednesday of every month, they get a truck from the Houston Food Bank of fresh fruits and veggies, and they very generously bring it over here. Our lot is a little bit better set up for it, so the truck can pull in, and some people can come by and, you know, pick up fresh fruits and veggies. So we do that. I'm not a trained counselor. You may have, talked with other guys in seminary. You know, we're trained to be priests, to minister the sacraments, to walk with the people of God. And so, you know, yeah, people when they have questions, when they have concerns, when they have issues with their family members, they'll sometimes want to talk and visit with us, you know. And my job is to do what you're doing, is listen, you know. And if I can, to help them, you know, to get in touch with somebody, if you know, the professional help to get them to that.
Right.
But yeah, the joy of being a parish priest is, you know, yeah, I walk in the neighborhood, you know, everybody living around here are my parishioners. And so, you know, if somebody's sick, or, you know, we have a lot of older people here in this part of town. You know, that's one of the beautiful things about the culture in this area, is people tend to keep their loved ones home with them. It's a grace when you can do that. Sometimes people can't, you know, because the health issues, people work and not being able to be present, you know, particularly when somebody starts having mental, you know, Alzheimer's or dementia or things like that, where you really need, you know, round-the-clock kind of care. And then, you know, some hospital visits and stuff like that.
Okay. So you are involved in, like, the needs of the parishioners whenever they come to you, and whatever needs they bring to you. And that's good. So the next question is about saints. So Catholicism, well, when I converted to the Catholic Church, one of the beautiful things I learned was about the communion of saints, mm-hmm. and how all these beautiful figures before us are inspirational for us to walk the Christian life. And so, do you have any particular saints or a saint that you feel like helps you in your vocation as a priest?
Yes. My first one is he's still blessed. He's not officially a saint yet. Francis Xavier Silos. He's from New Orleans. He was actually at the church where I was baptized that year. He was a German Redemptorist, and he, you know, very much epitomized these things I was mentioning. Came down to working among the immigrant community in New Orleans, which at that point would have been, you know, European immigrants, Irish and Germans and so forth, you know, living with them. One of the continual tragedies for immigrant populations of the 19th century, the 20th, even in our 21st century, is that, you know, they work hard. And they work so hard that they sometimes don't have time for anything else, you know, for family, for faith, even to, in a sense, get ahead to do those other things. So what Father Francis was all about was being present with the people. He died during one of the yellow fever epidemics in New Orleans. You know, he was ministering to the sick, visiting them in their homes and comforting them, and he got sick and he died from the disease. But that just being very, very with the people and you know, the practical things. Another one is you've heard of Father Francis McGivney. He's the founder of the Knights of Columbus. Same thing. You know, he was working in an Irish immigrant parish, and he saw those challenges of, you know, back in the 19th century, you know, there was a lot of there were a lot of safety rules in workplaces and stuff, you know, so if somebody got hurt, there, you know, business weren't required to do much about it, right. And they didn't have to pay them any kind of, you know, workman's comp, or, you know, there was no safety net. And that's why he started the Knights of Columbus, was to provide a safety net for the families of people who got hurt on the job, but it was also about, you know, building up community in a strange land, and that faith, that communion, which makes us one. You know, he remains a very important person to me. One other, keeping with the Francis, is Francis Xavier Cabrini. You know, this is an Italian nun. She came from a very poor family in Italy, very sickly most of her life. In fact, when she first heard her vocation, the sisters didn't want to touch her because they didn't think she was going to survive. She had just had poor health her entire youth. And so she ended up starting her own religious community because nobody else would take her. And she, you know, despite her, she battled with her health all her life. But, you know, she founded orphanages and schools and stuff in Italy. And she approached Pope Leo XIII, you know, because she had this dream of being a missionary in the Orient. And Leo told her, not east, but west. He sent her to the United States. and she worked in Chicago and New York, came to New Orleans, came throughout the United States, setting up schools and orphanages and hospitals. She's the first U.S. citizen to become a saint. And so just that, again, that she found Christ. She had that gift of the saints to see Christ in others. And, her energy, her, for a woman who with the difficulty she dealt with, what she accomplished is just incredible.
Mm-hmm. You see that every day in your vocation, like seeing Christ in others? And
that's what I'm working on. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm working on. Father Sal DeGeorge, who was the pastor here right before me, he was here on Thursday. We had a funeral. We average about 2 funerals a week in my parish because, thanks be to God, we have so many older people in this mm-hmm. area. Father Sal gave a great definition of mysticism. A mystic is someone who sees with the eyes of God, who sees things not as you or I see them, but sees a person how God sees them. So, and can see God in that, because that's what we want. In baptism, we put on Christ, and our whole job in the Christian life is to be Christ in the world, and to see Him in others. Sometimes it's easier, and sometimes it's not. Mm-hmm. We do have, like Saint Teresa talked about, Saint Teresa of Calcutta, Christ in His more distressing disguises around here. People who are dealing with psychological issues or addictions, our quasi-homeless population, which is still present here on the north side, even though the gentrification is making it harder for them to hang on, and the question just becomes, well, where do they go at, if not here?
Mm-hmm. So the next question is, some people may see the priesthood as maybe like an unfair sacrifice where I have to give up family or child, raising a child, or my whole life basically to serve God, and that's sort of like an unfair sacrifice. What do you think? What would you say to that?
I say Jesus already answered it. He says, no one who gives up father, mother, sister, brother, or home for anything of me will not receive them back and 1,000 more, much more. And it's true. There can be times of loneliness in the priesthood. And there can be times of sacrifice. But the truth is, everybody has times of loneliness. Even married people. My dad, being one of 6 kids, can tell you there's still moments in there, you would think, well, with all those people around, it's part of our human condition. The simple truth is, whatever God calls you to, there's nothing else that's going to make you any happier. So, if somebody's not called to the priesthood, then they won't be happy in it, most likely. Just as if somebody's not called to marriage and they enter into a relationship, then that can be truly happy in it, most likely. Although the grace of God is incredible. I think it's worth it. I think, the demands, the disciplines, parts of it, there's wisdom, because I don't have a wife or kids of my own to worry about, that makes me free. When somebody calls late at night or early morning, to be available in a way which it's hard. I have an old roommate from college. He's a Lutheran pastor. His dad was a Lutheran pastor. And for all through our college years, he was very clear he was never going to be a Lutheran pastor, but he's a pastor now. And part of the reason why he didn't want to do it was because that experience of, his dad was very generous, was very caring about his congregation, and that was a hard thing for his mom and for himself. Plus also, the way people looked at them, because you're the pastor's wife or kid, you've got to be a certain way, otherwise, shame on you. So there's certain graces in our Catholic approach. Although have you met any of the Anglican usage guys yet?
Mm-mm, no, I haven't.
Yeah, because we do have some married Catholic priests in our diocese these days. Okay. Our Lady of Walsingham, mm-hmm. there on Shady Villa. Mm-hmm. The fellows who converted from Episcopal, from the Episcopal Church or the Anglican Church, you know, if they're married, you know, they keep their families, obviously. Mm-hmm. Where God is joined together, no one must put asunder. Mm-hmm. So that may be a good place to ask about that part.
Well, it is a good idea. And also, I think when you look at the priesthood, you just don't know, you don't, some people may say it's an unfair sacrifice, but you gain so much. Like, you gain a whole new family. And instead of just having one family, you have hundreds or thousands of families that you cater to in regards to sick, dying, and in a spiritual way. You become the real father to them. So that's a real good approach to it. And the last question is, what would you say to somebody who is discerning the priesthood or maybe kind of feels like that inclination to go toward it, they're not sure, or somebody who kind of certain that they want to embark on this journey, what would you say to them?
First, thank you for listening to him, seeking to hear God's word, to keep praying, you know, to grow in your relationship with the Lord, so that you can hear his voice, and to trust that if you answer to what the Lord is calling you, there will never be anything better. You will always find joy. It's been my experience. There are sometimes, you know, things I miss on your subject of, you know, of family. I was just at an event, and I ran into a former student from my years as a high school teacher, and we hadn't seen each other in years. And she's like, and we were both giving each other those kind of funny looks. You know, trying, I know you.
Yeah.
and then we figured it out, and so it was that joy of, you know, catching up. Teachers, there's a lot of people who work in the medical field have that same, in a sense, experience of, yeah, of many families, because you get to be involved in people's lives. But the point is, if somebody is being called to the priesthood or the religious life, and the Lord will definitely reward them in ways that they cannot imagine. Mm-hmm. He's rewarded me. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I definitely thank you for your time. And just from speaking with you almost these 30 minutes, I can definitely hear in your voice that you do have a good sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And that you sound like you are very much embedded in the community and like you're a people person. And you generally just love the people you serve.
Thank you.
And I think it goes back to, as you said at the beginning, about humility. Mm-hmm. And I think Jesus Christ modeled that humility and love of people. Mm-hmm. And I think the way that you're carrying out your vocation these last 7 years is like a good example of that. And, you know, we all have to work on being humble and loving people more. And that's not an easy thing to do, especially when people have so many different personalities. But it's a work at it daily that you have to do. And that's all I had to say. And I definitely thank you for your time. And I hope you continue to persevere in your vocation as a priest in the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston. Any final things you want to say?
Thank you very much for your time, Efren, and for doing this ministry.
Okay, well, that's this episode of Priestly Passion, and I hope you guys continue to listen for others.